Welcome to the podcast all about women's wealth. Women's wealth is growing faster than men's. As women in the next generation rise in financial power, women will fundamentally change the meaning of legacy. Women as singles, mothers, wives, or widows not only need access to a full continuum of opportunities to save, invest, and preserve financial assets, they also need access to financial education and coaching, coupled with affordable and appropriate savings and credit building products at key times in their lives. Join us on Women Acquiring Assets and learn the stepping stones to home ownership, investment properties, cryptocurrency, business development, and learn all about saving stocks and so much more. Let's grow our networks together.
Women's Inflection Point is a nonprofit, educational, and results-driven entity providing women a success path to reach maximum potential in each of their life cycle stages. Women's Inflection Point focuses on three tiers of Maslow's hierarchy of needs pyramid: human wellness, safety, and self-actualization. In other words, we focus on your health, your money, and yourself. An inflection point is an event that results in dramatic and significant change. Our mission is to facilitate occurrences of inflection points that activate unleashed potential to propel women to reach their maximum potential in all aspects of their life. These occurrences are delivered at events throughout the year in organic and diverse, inclusive environments. For more information, visit us at www.womeninflectionpoint.org.
So excited.
Welcome back to another edition of Women Acquiring Assets with your host, Annika Jackson. And I am here with the lovely Nick Hill, fashion designer extraordinaire. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Annika. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so glad to have an opportunity to speak to you again. We have struck up a new friendship. We met on a Facebook group and planned some things together. Nick is doing some amazing things on Clubhouse. Liked me, I guess, enough to let me speak on her platform coming up. And then I was like, well, come on, let's hear more about you and help you inspire more women to find out about your brand, your mission, and everything about, you know, being a small business owner in this day and age. So as you know, with this podcast, we like to talk to women. We like to find out their pivot points, their passion, how they got to where they are, and everything in between. So let's get in and see where this goes. So Nick, where are you based?
I am based in New York City.
And how... Tell us your story. So I know you didn't originate there.
And no. I am a child of immigrants. I'm first generation from my family. And they've instilled like such an amazing work ethic in me. So I think that like a lot of my drive and my stick-to-itiveness and my determination really just comes from my family. And I decided, you know, one day I was supposed to be going to graduate school, and I thought I was going to be a forensic psychologist. And I ended up like, this is so random. I went to court with a friend of mine to like take care of some like family stuff. And I come from a very normal background, and like normal meaning like, you know, what we know normal to be growing up, right? Mom and dad's in the house, and I'm not abused. Everybody loves me, maybe sometimes too much. and all my needs are being met. I'm doing well in school. It's like very, very middle of the road. And so that's important, because going to court with my friend kind of exposed things to me that I had never been exposed to before. Okay. And I was supposed to be going or starting graduate school for forensic psychology in like a month. And I was literally sitting in that courthouse with my mouth open, completely shocked. And my friend's situation was fine. Like, she was literally going there for like paperwork type stuff. Wow. But everyone that was before her had really tragic stories that were so outside of what I was used to. And it really took me aback. And I had moved home to where my parents lived to go to graduate school in the state that they lived, like a lot of people do. And I went home that day and my mom was like, how was family court? How was your day? And I'm like, I don't think I can do this. Like this, I don't think I have what it takes to listen to those levels of problems, you know, all the time. And the unique thing with forensic psychology is you're not just hearing problems of everyday people. You're analyzing, depending on the aspect that you get into, crime related, things. So not only if I can't handle like divorce, right, or like, you know, standard, you know, run of the mill domestic issues, how in the world am I going to be able to hear like more evolved? And I was terrified. I'm just like, I don't think this, I don't know what I did. This is wrong. And my mom, she, amazing woman that she is, she looked at me, didn't skip a beat. And she's like, you've always loved fashion. Why don't you do something in that? Like, she didn't even question it, but that's the importance, I think, of having like really great support system and parents who know their children. She knows her child, and she knew her child well enough to know she probably will get eaten alive.
Oh, no. She wasn't going to discourage you from the dream that you thought you had.
Right.
Right. But then as soon as you said anything, she's like, well, how about, honey, you do this? Like, wow.
Bless her heart.
Yeah, that is such a, oh, you are.
And wow. I did. I applied to design. Say that again.
Oh, I said, you're definitely from the South.
Say that.
Bless her heart.
Bless her heart. Bless her heart. So I applied to design school. I found a school in Atlanta that accepted my transfer credits because I didn't want to have to do a full 4 years again because I had just finished doing 4 years. So I went to design school in Atlanta and I did really well. I graduated summa cum laude. I started working in like a retail store as like after graduation looking for a job and was applying for jobs in New York and LA. And eventually someone took pity on me and finally like scheduled an interview. So I did a phone interview with a company that I hadn't really heard, or a brand, a designer I hadn't really heard of. And I asked my mom, like, have you ever heard of this designer? And she's like, oh my God. Like, yes, I've heard of her. And I was like, well, I think I just got hired there. Norma Kamali, and I, amazing woman, completely genius at what she does. Really old school fashion and a great person to learn from if you're like new in the industry, because she's so well respected and is an amazing female entrepreneur in her own right. Hmm. She's actually quite impressive. So I got the job and she wanted me to start in a week. She didn't know, like, I was lying on my resume. So she didn't know that I was not in New York. She thought I already lived in New York, but meanwhile I was in Atlanta, Georgia. I was like using a friend's address. So I was like, oh, well, you know, out of respect for my employer, can I give them 2 weeks notice? And she's fine. And so I had 2 weeks to scramble from Atlanta to New York. I had been unemployed the whole entire year before, so I had like $0 and 0 cents. I was able to scrape together $300. I had 5 suitcases, and my friend's dad is a dentist, and she's like, well, we'll just ship your suitcases with my dad's business account. So we literally shipped 5 suitcases with her dad's FedEx account. And I packed like a weekender, and that's what I brought with me on the airplane and my $300. And I called another friend who lived or like is from New York. And she's like, oh, my boyfriend's brother is renting out his basement apartment. You'll stay there. And I was like, okay, perfect. And that was how I got here. Mm. And, you know, I never looked back.
Amazing. Amazing. But, and then how did you transition from working for another designer to launching your own line?
Yeah. So Norma, I worked for Norma for about a year, and she had a layoff, and she let go of about 8 or 9 people during her layoff, and I was one of them. And I ended up finding a job like 3 months later at Ralph Lauren, And I worked at Ralph Lauren for probably 6 years. That's important to my story because the first day I started working there, I started saving for the 401k that they offered. At Ralph Lauren, day one, you're eligible for every benefit they offer. It's an amazing company.
Wow.
So I aggressively started saving as much as I could in that 401k. And I saved in that 401k the entirety of my 6 years. So at the end of 6 years' time, I did it intentionally so that when I would leave, that was my nest egg to start my business. I never intended to use that money for retirement. I figured I'll be a millionaire one day and that'll be my retirement. I need this seed money to get this business started. And that's what I did. So when I left Ralph Lauren, I took that money and I started my business. And it was, I guess, all in all, it took me about 7 years once I got to New York, working in the industry to the point to where I felt remotely comfortable to start my own.
Amazing. And your company, Nick.
Yeah, 7 years.
Yeah. Tell me about Nick Hill Clothing.
Yeah, Nick Hill, again, I've got those Jamaican roots and I grew up in Florida and, you know, vacation, pools, beaches, sun, it's literally all I've been around the majority of my life. Like I have more flip-flops and bikinis than any one individual should. And it's just, you know, just growing up in the family that I grew up in, where we grew up. You know, I can remember after school in high school, we would drive down to the beach and, you know, with my family on Saturdays, you go to the beach and, you know, there was a pool in your backyard. So especially in South Florida, what that looked like is a lot of times, like you go to the beach on Saturday and Sunday and you're there during the day. And then we would leave the beach maybe around 2-3 o'clock and we'd go home for lunch. And then we'd grill by the pool and then we would just be in the pool the rest of the day. And that was weekends with my family. And it's just such fond memories for me. And, you know, some of the best memories of my life happened in those familial moments around the pool or at the beach. And it just made sense. And then when I had my apprenticeship with Norma, she started her business with swimwear also.
Okay.
She got, I guess, her big moment happened when Farrah Fawcett wore her swimsuit in a poster in the 70s. And it's like quite, like if you Google that image, you'll see Farrah Fawcett in this swimsuit. And that's a Norma Kamali swimsuit. And that's how she started her business. Mm. So as I started connecting the dots and realizing what I brought to the table, plus the skills that I had learned, and I got to see firsthand how Norma ran a business, it all kind of just culminated beautifully. And to me made sense to start my brand also with swimwear. Even though I'm capable of making so many more things, it seemed like a good, you know, starting point.
Amazing. And how long ago did you start your company?
4.5 years. I can never remember 4 or 5 years, so I'm just going to say 4.5.
and you're still, you've realized swimwear is your jam. Swimwear, resort wear. Yeah.
I love it. I really think, who knows what the future holds, but I really think for now, this is a lane that I really enjoy being in just because of all the things that it touches. I get to talk about travel. I get to talk about skincare. I get to talk about self-confidence. And I like being able to talk about those things in addition to making clothes. So for right now, I really love this lane.
Awesome. Wonderful. So what are some of the things? I know that it's a really big deal to you to make sure that women feel beautiful. And you design, I mean, I'm sure everybody says, oh, I designed to make beautiful things for women to feel confident. But swimwear is not something a lot of women feel confident in all the time. So how do you bring your value of making sure that every woman feels beautiful in your apparel, in your clothing, in your swimwear, in your resort wear?
That's such a good question, and I'm really glad that you asked it. I think what I've discovered and learned on this journey so far is it has more to do with the individual and less to do with the garment, ironically enough. I think that the only real way that any of us will feel beautiful is if we make a decision to feel beautiful about who we are and accept the bodies that we have. And I learned that while my goal is to definitely be more inclusive, I realized that I'm more body positive than I am inclusive. And there is a subtle difference. Like, I'm working towards more inclusion, and with my next collection that I have coming out this summer, there'll be some body inclusive pieces in that. But body positivity is more so saying, whether you're a 4X or an extra small or a medium or a large, you're comfortable the way that you are, and you accept that body the way that it is. And I think that's important because there is no magic little pill to make us, you know, snap our fingers and look the way we want to look overnight. So in lieu of having that fix, we have to get to a point to where we accept the way that we are. And I think once we, as women, accept the way that we are, the way that we look, whatever flaws we think that we have, whatever things we think that are beautiful, once we get to a place where we are accepting of ourselves the way that we are, I think that's when true beauty and true confidence really starts to shine, because it's irregardless of what society thinks about us or what external pressures we feel the world is putting on us, and it's truly shining from within. So what I try to do in my messaging and in the brand's voice and in some of the initiatives that I've started to take on Instagram and just as an individual is really just try to convey that, like, the way you are is exactly fine, and it's beautiful, and you should love that.
Love it. I love it. I love it. And I love that you're making a distinction between being body positive and inclusive. I don't know that I've really thought much about that distinction, but it does exist. And I also realize, you know, as we get older, we start, I think, really embracing who we are. You know, when you're in your 20s, you're so caught up in every single pound, every single inch, where you have gaps, where you don't, all of those things, or a lot of people are. I think the younger generations are much more body positive and comfortable in their own skin from an earlier age. And then you get into your 30s and it changes. And then, you know, I'm in my 40s. And so then when you get to my age,
me too.
It's even more of like, you know what? This is me. This is who I am. And I am so happy with where I am in life that if I have an extra pound or two, it's not the end of the world. I know who I am, and I'm going to rock that positivity and that confidence.
It's not the end of the world. And that acceptance, it's my opinion, that acceptance is truly the first step towards being confident in the skin that you're in. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's really, if you can't be comfortable in your skin, where will you be comfortable? Mm. You know, and that's how I look at it. Like, if you can't be comfortable in your skin, no swimsuit, no pair of jeans, no dress, no girdle, no bra, no nothing is going to make you feel better if you don't feel good about the skin that you wear everywhere. So the real trick is to get to peace with ourselves and the way that we are. And it doesn't mean that you don't seek improvement. It doesn't mean that if you desire more, you don't go after it. It just means that you're fine with where you are today, and whatever you desire, you'll work towards that for tomorrow.
This is a nice segue into some of the things that you do with your brand. Talk a little bit about the Live Beautifully Challenge.
Ooh, so the Live Beautifully Challenge, I love this so much because the Live Beautifully Challenge kind of creates the groundwork for each person learning to love themselves the way that they are. It's a 30-day free email challenge, and you basically just sign up for it. And every day for 30 days, you'll get emails from me sent to your inbox. And it's sent in the morning time so that as you wake up in the morning, when you're doing your meditation, your stretching, your prayers, whatever in your morning routine, you can start to incorporate this work into that morning routine. And you can really start to do the work to love yourself and to accept yourself the way that you are and to work on your self-talk. I really think that the way we talk to ourselves is like day one, day two of getting to a place where we accept ourselves the way that we are. And the Live Beautifully Challenge is just the beginnings of that. I'm really proud of it. It was so much fun to write and to do the work. And it's honestly a lot of the things that I say to my friends or I have said to clients, you know, when they're crying in the fitting room. It's really sad. And, you know, it kind of was the culmination of my psychology degree and my design degree was the amount of, for lack of a better word, I guess, handholding and, reinforcement that I was doing with women when they had to go somewhere in a swimsuit and just dreaded it to the point where they were crying. I no one should feel that way about having to put an article of clothing on.
Right.
And you know, they kind of just shed so much light on so many other things. And you know, long story short, the Live Beautifully Challenge kind of came out of that.
Was that developed during the pandemic or was that something that you had already conceived of and had running?
It was conceived during the pandemic, but like just December. I think I was having a conversation with a friend of mine in December and I realized that I wasn't doing enough for that initiative of trying to help women feel beautiful. I think that it's more than just creating well-made clothes and swimsuits. I think that, you know, I needed to do more. And in seeking to do more, my friend was telling me about a challenge that she had done for her audience. And I thought, you know, I think that makes sense because, you know, it's more than 5 minutes worth of time that's required to speak to someone, to help uplift them and to help make them feel better about themselves. So I thought a challenge might be a good way to go about it. And I'm so glad that I did it. And, you know, even though I wrote it, I signed up for it too. So I got those emails too. And it was really exciting, you know, every morning to see it because I think sometimes I sound more profound than like in the moment, you know? So like in the morning when I'm waking up, I'm looking, I'm like, wow, I said that. So it was just really, really fun, really exciting. And I really hope that it helps just one person. Mm-hmm. And if it helps just one person, then I feel like it was worth it.
Oh, I love, okay. Now I have to go on and do that challenge myself and get my team to do that challenge. Yeah, I love it. I'm a big believer in, and I think this is something we've really seen during the pandemic, is you have to prioritize self-care. You have to prioritize yourself and you have to, you know, if you're looking inside yourself and you're not comfortable with what you're seeing, then talk to somebody or do some challenges, figure out a way to make it better and make it whatever it needs to be for you, right?
Absolutely.
Whether it's sleeping more, whether it's making sure you're exercising, if you know, whatever it is, if you're taking 5 minutes to read or to do, you know, do a challenge, do something different. And so I've been trying to mix it up and do some manifestation work and read different books and just challenge myself to help myself on my journey too. So I love this.
I think you're going to love the challenge then, because it kind of touches on all of those things.
Nice.
Meditation, working out, being with yourself, figuring out where the beginning of some of these insecurities started, so that you can, you know, forgive that moment, that person, yourself, and heal and move on, and so that you can live the rest of your life the way you want to live it. I think you're going to love it.
Nice. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break before we come back with some more questions.
Hi, this is Annika Jackson. At Annika PR, we provide public relations strategy, content marketing, and brand and design services. We are gifted with the ability to draw excitement to an event, brand, or concept. Don't just take our word for it. See our clients' work in Forbes, CNN, Amazon TV shows, and much more. Want your brand amplified? Go to AnnikaPR.com. That's AnnikaPR.com.
And we are back on Women Acquiring Assets. I'm your host, Annika Jackson. I'm here with Nick Hill of Nick Hill Clothing. We're just talking about her Live Beautifully Challenge. Besides designing beautiful swimwear and resort wear to make women feel beautiful outside and inside, you also do monthly Instagram Lives.
Yes. This is something that just started. So I did my... I do it in conjunction with another person, Ailey Steele. She's an amazing mindfulness mentor and personal development coach. And I met Ailey during the pandemic, just like randomly online. And our values just kind of align. So much of what she teaches her clients, echoes what I am saying, you know, through the brand's voice. And we just decided to do these monthly Instagram Lives. We do them the first Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. Eastern time and 11 p.m. GMT time. Ailey's in Ireland. She's absolutely amazing. And we talk about ways to improve self-confidence, ways to improve your self-esteem, why we have poor self-esteem, what we can do about it, and just how we can love ourselves better. So I really enjoy conversations like this so much. And I love being able to talk with Ailey about this topic, especially because she really works in that space, where I think I meet women at maybe the intersection of what she does and their need for swimwear or their need for, you know, clothing. Ailey's working within that space heavily on a day-to-day basis. And it's just really great to be able to do this work with her, even if it's only once a month. But it was just another way to be able to, you know, kind of get into that space a little bit more and really add value to the people who I think need it.
But I think it's a wonderful extension of your brand, and it shows who you are and how you're going to show up for your clients. You know, that you're not just going to dress them, but you're also really invested in making sure that women do feel confident, secure. And that's really beautiful. It's so beautiful. And now you're also starting to do some twice a week, is it, on Clubhouse?
Yeah.
So, because I know that you're really interested in helping uplift other small businesses and make sure they have their practices in place. So for those who are listening, if you don't know Clubhouse, you should run to get on it right now. It's an app that is, it reminds me of old school AOL chat rooms in some ways, except instead of typing.
Yes.
Do you remember the old days of the internet? Back when it first started, you'd have to log on to AOL and you would see topics of interest and go in and find people and just like type in chats. And that's what I feel Clubhouse is, except that it's voice activated, right? So you're still going into different rooms on different topics, and there's so much great information on it.
So much. And the networking that you can do on that platform is so amazing. And it's just, I enjoy it. I don't use it as much as I probably But I do enjoy it. And I do, like you said, these bi-weekly chats also at 6 p.m. Eastern time, just helping people, because I realized, you know, I know a lot of random information. I'm not sure why. I've also been fortunate enough to meet great people like yourself, or like Ailey, or like tons of other people who are really great in the spaces that they're in and are really doing amazing things. So it's an opportunity for that person to be able to talk about their work and what they do. And then it's an opportunity for anyone that's listening to be able to speak to an expert in that field in a very approachable way, mm-hmm. and just get great advice. I mean, myself included, like, because I'm not a finance expert, but when I talk to finance experts, I learn things, you know, too. I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. And I'm always taking notes. Every time I do these little chats in Clubhouse, I'm always taking notes. And I got the idea the other day that maybe one day these notes need to be a book of some sort,
yeah.
because they vary from like marketing to photo shoots to finance to digital marketing to email advertising. Like, it's all over the place in terms of like what we've spoken about. And the thing I love the most about it is how freely these lovely people share information. And if you think about it, in any other space, if, you know, I had a trademark attorney on there for an hour giving like such amazing advice, you know, from the mouth of a lawyer, but she would probably charge for that consultation, you know, if we were in her office. And on Clubhouse, she's just freely sharing that information, and we could ask her anything. And I think that that's like the power of Clubhouse, is just being able to intimately chat with whoever, you know, is there about whatever the topic is at hand. And I think that more small businesses should have access to this information, and it's there, you know, if you have to know how to look for things, yeah. to find it. And not everyone is a natural researcher. So, you know, if digging through books or libraries or the internet isn't your jam, then, you know, there's a space in Clubhouse where you can come and get some targeted information on a topic, and maybe it will help you. And it's free.
Right, exactly. I know people, you have to be on iOS, but there are hacks. I know somebody who has an Android phone, but she bought an iPad, and she's able to do Clubhouse on the iPad. So there are hacks out there. So going back to your business, how did the pandemic change the landscape for you, if it did?
It's interesting, because I wasn't as affected as like a lot of other brands. At the end of 2019, I had started doing some rebranding. Mm-hmm. So I had slowed down everything anyway, just because I changed the names ever so slightly. I changed my logo. I had like started implementing some new strategies and got rid of some other ones. So I was doing like a lot of behind the scenes work. I wasn't really posting on Instagram. I wasn't doing any trunk shows or any pop-ups or anything like that. So I had already pulled back a ton the last like 5 to 6 months of 2019.
Oh, wow.
And I came up with an aggressive sales strategy for 2020. Mm-hmm. And it started in January of 2020. And I had begun my sales strategy, and I had my wholesale rep, and I had hired a person to help me. And we were preparing to do Swim Week Miami in the mm-hmm. summer of 2020. And, you know, March happened, and obviously everything changed for everyone. So for me, what that meant was really I wasn't able to do the things that I had planned to do. But because I had already kind of slowed everything down already, I just kind of stayed in that space. So I had become accustomed to working on the back end of the business and, you know, firming up the foundation and getting my LLC and starting to figure out how to go about, you know, do I trademark my logo or the name, and like getting all these like types of things answered. You know, do I still need to work with a wholesale rep? Should I be doing a trade show? So when 2020 happened, I felt comfortable because I was already operating in a modified space anyway. I was extremely fortunate because I did not pay a deposit on any of the trade shows that I was thinking of doing. And I didn't have any orders in at the factory. And that honestly saved my business. Had I paid the deposit, and if I had any work on the line at the factory, I actually think I'd probably have to go out of business like so many other, you know, small fashion brands did. The most difficult thing I think for me for 2020, and I say difficult with a grain of salt because I recognize that so many people had such tragic 2020s, and by no means am I comparing what I went through, which is nothing compared to what some people went through. But I was preparing for the CFDA Vogue Fashion Fund. And they invited me and a bunch of other designers to an interview that they were doing last January. So I went and I was very excited about it. And I asked my questions and they seemed to recognize my brand by name when I mentioned it. So they were like, oh yeah, you're the girl with the swimwear. And I was like, yeah. right. They know me. So that I was really looking forward to that. And that, I felt confident that I would have, if not made it, like made it far in the process, right?
Right.
And I was working on my sketches and working on my samples and working on my portfolio. So 2020 took that away from me. And it's really interesting because they've never come back with the Vogue Fashion Fund. Like it ended and they modified it into something else. So I don't think that opportunity will ever present itself in that way again. So I think that was probably the biggest thing that happened with the brand. But I just pivoted and started working on more clothing. I obviously wasn't able to do face-to-face events anymore. So, and I don't have a physical store. So a lot of times it was doing pop-ups at like, you know, maybe you have a store and you invite me in to do a pop-up and we do a pop-up that way, or I do a trunk show at your store, or, you know, I sell in a market, you know, over the summer here in New York kind of thing. So I just switched to online, and then I spent the majority of the time, you know, trying to figure out how to operate a strictly e-commerce B2C business. And that was my 2020 really. And I learned so much about e-commerce and operating online. And it was a great lesson. You know, I'm glad that I went through it because I think I'm more rounded, right? So now I can do the face-to-face and I can do online. And I'm not just one type of brand anymore. I can do both. I can do retail and I can do wholesale.
And now I understand you are taking that out to help other people who want to have a fashion brand understand how to run that. Is that correct?
Sort of, yeah. So after I finished writing the 30-day challenge, I wrote a online course, and it's specifically for people who need to learn product development and production.
Oh, nice.
So I don't really talk about any of the brand stuff, or I assume that if you've made it this far, you know that, and you need targeted help on this topic. And it's all the stuff that I learned when I was working for Norma Kamali and Ralph Lauren, because I worked in global manufacturing, product development, and production.
Amazing.
Where I kind of bottle it all up and wrote a really, I think, good course that I'm really proud of. And it launches May 2nd. And I'm finishing up with it. The course is done and I'm just doing like you know, all the computer work to make it online. And I'm really excited about it.
Wonderful. I love that. I love when we can use our innovation to help other people and kind of see like what were our pain points or what did we have to go through? What did we need to learn? And what can we take out of that and transfer that knowledge? So that's what today is all
absolutely
about.
And isn't that what we should be doing? Like making it better for the people who come up behind us? Like, why does it have to be so difficult? As a designer going to design school, I knew zero about production when I started working in the industry. And production is not easy. Like you have to think a very specific way in order to organize and orchestrate. You're literally like a conductor and you're orchestrating all these various things happening at the same time so that you can get something by a specific date and time in the future. And it's really a beautiful process, but not an easy one if you're brand new to it and you have no clue what to do in that space. You're like, wait, what? Yeah. So hopefully people will be helped by it for anybody that needs it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what else would you like to share with our audience today?
I think it's just really important to, if you have a dream, go after it, regardless of how big it is, or how many people are telling you can't do it. Mm. I think it's really important to just find a way to isolate your thoughts and to get the influence of other people out of your head if they're not constructive, to really pursue your passion and to do what your heart is calling you to do. The world needs you. Whatever, there's a reason why you got the idea that you got. You know, I didn't get the idea and Annika didn't get the idea. You got the idea. So if you got that idea, that means that on some level, at some point in time in the future, you can do it. And you just have to believe in yourself enough every day to really think that can happen. And put yourself in an environment that is conducive to make it happen.
That's beautiful. You really are living beautifully. You are the epitome of your slogan. So Nick, how can people find you on social media and your website and look at your beautiful designs?
Thank you. On the World Wide Web, it is www.nickhyl.com, N-I-C-H-Y-L. On Instagram, it's Nick Hyl Clothing. On Clubhouse, if you want to tune in and get some free advice, it's at Nick Hyl. If you want to sign up for the Living Beautifully Challenge, it's yourlivingbeautifully.com, and that's Y-O-U-R-E. And if you want to check out the course, it's nickhylfashionuniversity.com.
Very nice. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you to our audience for listening to another week of Women Acquiring Assets, and we'll be back next week.
Bye, everyone.
Well, that's it for this episode. To learn more about who we are and what we do, visit www.womeninflectionpoint.org/WAA. If you have anything you'd like to share, Annika would love to hear from you. And she can be reached at info@womeninflectionpoint.org. Be sure to tune in every week for another episode and learn more about how financial assets are a store of resources that women and families can tap into, particularly during emergencies, and how wealth can provide a nest egg that can be leveraged into investments like a home, an investment property, or a business, and then can be passed on to future generations. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.